G'day, listener. Welcome once again to The Wholesome Show. The show where me, that's Will Grant, and Rod Lambert's that guy over there.
Hurro!
Yeah, we have a beer with someone interesting. How are you doing, Rod, though?
Oh, I'm ready to be interested and beard.
Fair enough.
I'm feeling psyched.
Okay, Rod, here we go. Here we go. So you are, you know, you produce content out there for the world. You write about science communication. You write not just for, you know, journal articles in the academic world, but you write opinion pieces out there for newspapers.
It's been known to happen.
Yeah.
I opine at times.
Okay, here's the question I want to ask. Yeah. How wide of an audience do you reckon you cut through? I'm not asking numbers here, but types of people. Do you preach to the choir? Or do you hit those people that are really hard to hit?
Everyone. I mean, basically, the unengaged read what I write and they become engaged. It doesn't matter what the topic is.
Are you sure?
Anything.
Anything.
I could write about soil. I could write about...
So you could write about soil and you would get the...
Soil loathers. People with phobias would come to my blog or my spot and they would read it.
Are you being true?
No. Yeah. No. Well, I don't know that I'm not. I've never tested it. And, you know, being you know, research-oriented people... If I can't prove I haven't, that doesn't mean I didn't. Isn't that right?
Yeah, look, something. I don't know if you can take that to the bank. But look, the thing that I wonder about, you know, it's part of the world of science communication and efforts to, you know, talk about science and get to a range of different audiences that, you know, a lot of the stuff that people do, you know, you end up treading a rut. I'm, you know, obviously The Wholesome Show, you know, we get out to the most diverse possible audience on the planet.
There's no question
about that. Our listeners are basically the United Nations General Assembly, not just the Security Council.
Oh, and all the people who help them as well.
And all the people that help them throughout the class hierarchies. Yep. Other than that, I feel like a lot of work in science communication often talks to one particular group of people. But
possibly other science communicators. Just putting it out there.
Look, I want to talk to someone who's doing some fascinating work in the world. I don't know if he calls himself a science communicator. I know he calls himself a cartoonist, but he does communicate science in his cartoons. And
that sounds tricky.
Look, I want to see. Is he someone that's going to connect to a wider audience? So I'm going to introduce you now. This is Stuart McMillan. So on his card, it says all things. This is his business card. It has a picture of is it an aardvark?
It's a giant anteater.
You've
just made the most common mistake that people make when they read my business card.
No, but I'm glad that I make common mistakes. I don't want to make uncommon
mistakes.
You want
to make posh mistakes.
Well, I was going to posh mistake.
No, that's a common mistake.
So, Stuart, you're a cartoonist. What do you call it? Are you a straight cartoonist? Do you call yourself a science cartoonist, a communicator? What do you say?
I normally say comics artist because I guess comics are the mediums that is the medium that I use. Yeah. So comics meaning telling a story panel by panel.
Is that comics with an X?
I don't use that, but I know that was a big thing sort of in the 60s underground for the, I guess that was the underground comics as opposed to the DC and Marvel sort of superhero type ones. So I guess I use comics with the CS at the end.
And, like DC and Marvel. So you're like, goes Marvel, then DC, then you. Not quite. Fair enough.
After this show, boom. Marvel will be in your rearview mirror. Don't worry about that.
So comics rather than cartoonists. What would you say the distinction there is?
Okay, so comics are a way of telling stories with panel by panel juxtaposed artwork. Yep. And you could tell that sort of a story with photographs that are next to each other or paintings that are next to each other, but I choose to use cartoons in my comics.
Okay.
So does that mean a string of panels of paintings, would you be able to call that a comic?
If it was intentionally part of a narrative.
Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
I didn't realise that. Okay. I thought it was all the hand-drawn cartoon. No. That's interesting.
So I'm both a cartoonist and a comics artist.
Okay, fair enough. That's good. Okay, so the genres, I've looked through, I was looking through some of yours the other night, but I've come across them a couple of years ago as well. You've been doing this for a while. A lot of your stuff, so the most recent one, and are we allowed to talk about it yet, Stuart?
Yes, we are, definitely.
You're about to launch a brand new one called Energy Slaves.
Energy Slaves, about one of my heroes, Buckminster Fuller, who was... got one of the best names ever.
How did he get such a good name and then become all awesome? That's what I've always wondered.
The name makes you awesome.
Is that it?
That's why we're fucked. Will Grant, Rod Lambert. It's just boring names.
No, Will Grant.
No,
awesome. I'm like Max Power or something like that.
That's true. Your name is awesome. Word is stuck with mine.
But how, you know, I always think, you know, that is such an awesome name. He lived into it somehow.
Exactly.
If he was named Banal Mister, then...
Boring fuck. Boring fuckistine. What is it? Buckminster Fuller?
But anyway, Buckminster Fuller, your hero.
Yeah, yeah, well, he was really big in the 60s in particular. He he's well known for inventing the geodesic dome, which is the strongest possible structure that anyone can create, which is made from a whole lot of hexagons and...
it's the strongest possible structure?
It is.
So stronger than triangles?
It well, it uses the sort of power of triangles and hexagons. He spent a lot of his life analysing sort of the mathematics of structures and tetrahedrons and so forth. And he did many things with his life. And what I'm talking about in this Energy Slaves comic is his thoughts on energy. And he realised that there was just so much in our lives that are only possible because of energy. He realised that we wouldn't be able to have the lights on in the room that we're on right now without electricity to keep it running.
Yep.
We wouldn't be able to have our cars going along the roads if it wasn't for the petrol that was powering the motors to push it forward. Mm. And he realised that energy just wasn't something that was this pure abstract thing. It's something that we can actually think of in human terms.
He was a pioneer of this?
At least
in the public space?
In the public space. I mean, this is still something that's quite unknown by a lot of people.
So when I hear those statements, you know, a human today, you know, 21st century, has, compared to someone from 1900, has like 50 slaves working for them, doing their dishes and whatnot, one packed into the dishwasher, one in each wheel of your car sort of thing.
How many slave powers is your car?
Well, it's diesel, so it's worse than it was in the marketing.
How many slaves to one horsepower, though, I'm wondering? Is it three?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head there with horsepower, because a lot of us, back when they were originally creating steam engines, they realised everyone was familiar with horses as the main unit of, you know, driving a plough around the farm or driving a pump.
So people were pretty good at estimating those days. Oh, that job would take five horses. That's an eight-horse job.
Of course, when you got this engine, which was fairly small compared to the size of a horse, they thought, well, we need a way to let farmers or engineers know how many horses they can replace it with. So
horsepower didn't really exist as a term until we started moving away from horses, obviously.
Correct.
You wouldn't say... this is an eight-horse job, actually, until you got the engines.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about before then, but...
yeah, seriously, if I have a time machine, that's the first thing I want to check.
You imagine a tradie coming around the morning, oh, it's an eight-horse job, mate. No, I've only got seven. It's going to cost you.
Size seven, like how you get different size eggs. XL eggs, XL horses. Yeah.
So Buckminster Fuller.
He said, well, why are we even talking about horsepower if this was in the 60s when, you know, most people were living in cities like we are today and don't come into farm animals on a regular basis? But he realised that we're all familiar with our own body strength, and we can imagine the amount of energy that we could generate if we were on a treadmill for an eight-hour shift, which is about...
I got to say, I can't quite imagine that.
I'm thinking the first hour pretty good, but after that, diminishing return.
I mean, I get that it would be hard work. I get that. Mm. And I get if there's two of me and three of me, I could probably do a little bit more, but... Mm.
Yeah, so it's the kind of thing, you know, you always hear these people say, well, this would be a great solution to our fossil fuel and greenhouse gas problems, and if we got all the gyms in town and we just connected some sort of an electrical generator to all the people on the treadmills and all the people on the cycling machines, we'd be able to power cities. But what I learned through researching this Energy Slaves comic is it wouldn't really work because our bodies are so puny compared to the fossil fuels that we base our lives around.
So how many energy slaves do I? Okay, I'm a white Western Australian person.
Yep.
I live in a suburban house. How many energy slaves do I have, and what are their names?
Yeah, it would be in the hundreds.
Really?
Yeah, I guess
hundreds.
It depends on many things.
I'll
give you a statistic that is probably the most mind-blowing statistic of my research process into this comic. I realised... Well, this was all... Buckminster Fuller came up with this unit of energy slaves based on if we took someone who's working a normal eight-hour day instead of actually working at a desk or, you know, working behind the counter at McDonald's or something like that, if we got them on a treadmill for 8 hours for 250 shifts per year,
Walking or running?
Just doing sort of what is a sustainable amount of energy for the average person, something they gathered through army research into how much sort of work someone can expend
on it. So an energy slave was post 8-hour day sort of thing. We're working an energy slave in a... We've had some good union victories here for the energy slaves. They're not working 24 hours a day.
No. So it is based on a sustainable basis like that.
Yeah,
he realized that we would be able to generate 250 kilojoules of work per day.
Yep.
And what that means is about 70 or 75 watts of continuous effort. So that's about enough to light one of those, if you can imagine, an old 75-watt incandescent globe.
So what, you work for a day and you generate a Tim Tam's worth of energy? Is that what we're talking about?
Not here? Quite, but it's around that extent. And basically, the statistic that I found really amazing was that if you take an entire person's year workout on a treadmill, the amount of energy that we'd be able to generate is about 500 megajoules. Now, your next question is how much is 500 megajoules? That's about the equivalent of 14 litres of petrol.
Oh, Jesus.
So what's the petrol tank in your car?
Yeah.
Or the diesel tank?
Probably. It's more than that.
It'd be probably 50 or 60
litres.
Yeah,
about 60 litres. Yeah.
So the average person who drives a car uses that 14 litres in about 2 or 3 days based on Western consumption of petrol. So
that's wild.
That's only our driving around town in a car. If you think of all the tractors that are out there plowing up the fields, all the planes that are taking us to our holiday destination, all of the...
I fixed the problem then. We do energy slave for the doll. So when people are on the doll, I'm trying to help out our conservative government here. They want people to work for the doll. We just put them on treadmills 8 hours a day. They can still fill in forms.
But you're not listening. It wouldn't solve the problem.
Exactly.
But it would solve some of the problem.
Energy slaves are a metaphor, man.
Oh, I thought they were literal.
It's a metaphor.
Like going down in the store, I'd like some
energy slaves. What I want to know, Stuart, is where did the concept for doing a comic about this come from? I mean, you know, most comics can cover a whole range of society, but a lot of them, you know, do superheroes and stuff like that. Mm. Where did you go, yeah, this is the thing that I want to do in a comic?
Mm. Well, I did originally start out trying to do funny comics, your classic three-panel gag comics, and... They didn't really work out because I wasn't that funny. And I'm talking 10 years ago at this stage. Yeah. And I was very into environmental issues and was reading a lot of really interesting books with a lot of facts about climate change and sustainability and so forth. And I realized that wouldn't it be great if other people were out there with this knowledge that I've just read over the course of the last 4 hours, if I could somehow get that into people's heads. And I thought that it would be a good medium to have a comic as the in-between so that someone could get a distilled version of that big idea that was covered over 300 pages in a book. They could read an efficient version of that in the comic and have a fairly decent overview of what the big issues were.
Are you a comic reader yourself? I mean...
Do you
read them for pleasure as well?
Yeah, in fact, I've recently released a video of my top 10 essential graphic novels, the books and the graphic novels that I think everyone should be reading.
That was my next question, though. So a graphic novel is still the same.
That's
kind
what
of grown-ups thing, just
call
bigger?
It. When they're just,
it's not a comic book.
We puff up our chest and stand a bit straighter and
one
say,
is reading a graphic
no.
novel.
Oh, there you go. That's a posh mistake.
They're not pictures. They're illustrations.
Well, I think Will has basically hit the nail on the head there with that comics and graphic novels are basically the same thing, but I guess the word comics is associated in people's minds with childish juvenile things. It's a way for people who are adults and they're so serious and grown up to...
So it's like you can do the Batman story that is a comic, but also you can do the Batman story that's a bit darker and edgier and deals with, I don't know, depression or something like that, and that's a graphic novel.
Yeah, and a
lot Batman's
of...
hilarious, though. But what about then long-form comics? So I've heard that you call... Don't you do long-form comic?
Mm, yep.
So they're just basically the thing in the middle?
What do you mean?
There's a comic strip, there's a graphic novel, and there's a long form in the middle. It's just about length.
Well, I guess you could call graphic novels long form because they are long and...
They have form.
That's right.
Your stuff, Energy Slaves was like 80 panels sort of thing?
84 pages, so there's...
That's a graphic novel, surely.
Oh, no, I've seen a graphic... I mean, like, what's a famous one? Like, The Watchmen.
The Dark Knight, the first one ever.
I don't know how long that is, but The Watchmen will be 300 pages or so or more. So like it's maybe not as many words as a full novel, but in terms of pages, and there's more pictures filling everything up. It feels like a novel in your hand. Whereas
you could use a bookmark to mark your place compared to a little floppy comic.
I definitely used a bookmark to mark my place in The Watchmen. I had to stop reading it.
But you have a short attention span. In that book's defense, You forgot what we were talking about, didn't you?
By the way, Watchmen is number 6 on my top 10 essential graphic novels list. Okay, so you'll have to see what the other 5 are by going to my YouTube channel and watching the video.
Fair enough. I'll go through and have a look.
So, how long does it take? I don't know if you can tell this. What's the sort of average length of time it would take to get through, for example, this Energy Slaves one for a person?
Mm. Well, it's about for a reader.
Yeah, for a reader.
It's probably a 10-minute reading experience. Okay. Someone can get by going to energyslaves.com to go straight to that comic on my website.
There you go.
We better note that then. Yeah. 10 minutes. So, and do you pay a lot of attention to how long it takes people? That doesn't not really that important.
I can get the stats through my website. And
okay.
But are you trying to hit something? Are you trying to hit the feel for the story? You think you should be hitting 80 to 90 pages, or are you like, no, I'll tell the length of the story that counts?
Yeah, I do look at what length of the story is that I'm covering with my comic and see how I can. I want to be as efficient as possible with my use of panels, but I also...
Because they take a long time to draw.
Well, I'm mostly thinking of the reader, so there is some benefit to just dropping people into a story, but there is also some benefit in sort of stretching it out a little bit and sort of tantalising people with that.
Oh, you energy slave tease you.
You're going to luxuriate in the energy slaves.
It's luxuriate.
Because I read an interesting quote this morning that I thought I'd write down and bring along to tell you guys.
I'll just hold it up to the microphone.
This is from Chris Anderson, the head honcho of TED Talks. He says, knowledge can't be pushed into a brain, it has to be pulled in. Before you can build an idea in someone else's mind, you need their permission. Wow. So what that means is originally when I was trying to educate people about environmental issues, I was tempted to just sort of push these propagandistic ideas on people, but I now see the benefit in sort of luring people into getting them interested in what the story's all about. Like, what's this Buckminster Fuller guy doing stuck in traffic and imagining all the cars around him? And
I want to ask on that. So, you have... I was going to use the word agenda... and I'm still going to use the word agenda, but what I'm going to do is say in this first sentence that obviously the word agenda is potentially loaded, but you're doing this with a goal. This is work for you, but by the same token, you want to achieve something. You want people to be more environmentally aware, better environmental behaviours, all that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
So how much are you getting impact, and how do you measure that? I mean, I know some of your stuff has gone viral. Mm. I think you had some huge stuff on Reddit. I think which comic was that went?
I'm probably best known for Rat Park, which is ratpark.com. That's a famous, that's probably the most famous comic I've drawn, which is about some interesting Canadian experiments into drug addiction in rats, which has sort of human implications as well.
Wow, I'll get to see that now. I'm excited. I want to know, how long does it take you to do a 90-page comic, if there is an average?
It's roughly 8 hours per page, which is that's an average of me doing all the research and writing and etc. So there's a little bit of writing, a little bit of research averaged out, plus all the artwork that I draw as well.
So this is like a 3-month minimum sort of project for this?
Yeah, I guess so. And it, unlike an energy slave, it's one of those...
You can't outsource it to an energy slave?
I know.
Just put it in the microwave and... So is there a return?
What sort of return?
Well, I mean, how does this... I mean,
I get paid two incomes. I get paid an income of money, which isn't that great, and I get paid an income of street cred and satisfaction.
Totally legitimate. Mm. I mean, I'm just trying to understand, in the sense that you're doing this, obviously, for both for passion and to achieve things.
Mm.
Eating's good too. Yeah. And I think there's that. We've got to recognise there's a whole range of reasons that we'll do something. Street cred is great. That it's anyone who says no, street cred's worth nothing. It's got to pay the bills. It's not all that.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty much doing it because there are many jobs out there that I have done in the past when I've worked full time jobs that I felt like someone else could be sitting in this chair and doing the job exactly as well as I could. So why am I here? And with this comics thing, I realized I had such a unique set of perspectives and topics that I'm interested in, both environmental, science, social commentary, I thought, as well as the interest in drawing comics and the interest in sharing ideas with the world.
So, were you a good drawer illustrator beforehand, or did you learn to do this while you were doing it?
I think it's drawist.
Drawist, yeah. Did you get the moment and it's like, okay, I'll teach myself to draw while I'm drawing rats?
Yeah, basically I was drawing when I was in grade 4, 5, 6 in primary school, and then just dropped it when I was too cool to do art in high school. And yeah, I had to pick up.
Girls do art. I mean, you know, isn't that the place to go?
Yeah,
I didn't do art.
Hindsight's 2020 though,
isn't
Rod?
Isn't it? Yeah, I know. Music too.
Yeah, everyone wishes they'd stick to it.
I did chemistry. That went well.
Yeah, I'll go play rugby.
Yeah.
That was fine. Bastard.
Rugby gets the girls. Is that it, Rod?
Oh, yeah. No. For those of you who don't know what rugby is, it's a sport.
But I did, and then I guess 10 years passed between me picking up a pen to draw anything and then me having this idea, oh, wouldn't it be good if I was a comics artist or drew cartoons? And I had to literally just pick up a pen for the first time in years and start doing...
Did you feel confident, or is this like,
No.
Oh, that looks horrible, 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 that looks horrible. Oh, it's not so bad.
Well, the thing is, everything I drew, the next thing I drew was slightly better, so I'd always be looking for if I did a 10-page comic, I'd always find the best panel of that comic and say, okay, next time that needs to be the baseline that the rest of it is, and I'd ratchet myself up from there.
But that way madness lies, because that's a never-ending upward slope of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I'm on the slope still.
I was going to say that rictus grin's making it look not very
When do you tap out? I mean, when do you say, yep, that's good enough. I've got to go on to the next panel and I've got to, you know, push this thing out.
It's a little hard to define, but I sort of know it when I see it. And I've always got a picture in my head of what this panel should look like. And I'm always telling myself, the next comic that I draw, it's going to be photorealistic. Like, that's the word that pops in my head. Photorealistic.
But they're not. I mean, that's the point of comics. I mean, the whole point is to not be photorealistic. You can do way more cool things with them when they're not.
Yes, but I've got pretensions of being a photorealistic artist. And I guess what I've got, it's a weird blend of, I guess, I try and make the backgrounds look fairly, you know, if it's someone in the city, I try and make the buildings look fairly realistic and appealing. But I guess the characters do have the simple Tintin style face with the dots for eyes. So
but isn't that, that's part of the charm, isn't it? Surely. I would have thought, you know, if it looked too photorealistic, you go, oh, this is textbook now, I'm a bit bored.
Yeah.
But as soon as it's a bit cartoony, you think, oh, this is fun. And you can fool people into thinking it's fun, even if it's learning.
Yeah, and there's a whole theory behind, for example, if you are doing a story like Tintin, or if you're doing a story like Rat Park, if you make the main character quite simplistic drawn, with little dot eyes and a face that's fairly generic, compared to the detailed scene that they're in, I guess the reader can identify themselves with that person in contrast to the detailed world, and they can immerse themselves. Oh. And
so it's like there's not very many details there, and they can imagine the details of themselves.
They colour their own face in, so to speak.
Hey, that's cool.
Now, if you want to learn more about this, go to number 4 on my top 10 comics video, and I talk about an amazing book called Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, who talks about all this kind of theory of...
That sounds a bit meta, though, like having an Understanding Comics book in your top 10 comics books.
And I did mention that. I said, this sounds a bit weird, but it really helps. It's sort of like a master key that unlocks the door to all these other comics out there and allows people to understand how these magical squares are telling them stories. And he mentions that the magic of comics doesn't happen in the panel themselves with all the beautiful artwork. It actually happens between the panels where
there's a space between
there's nothing
sounds.
Drawn. Yeah. There's nothing drawn, so the reader has to engage all their senses and to bridge the gap between the two pictures.
So this is like the moments when we have the spaces between words on The Wholesome Show.
They're
That's
our best
when the
bits.
Magic...
They're definitely our best bits. They're not a lot of them, but we're very proud.
Oh, no, they're like, oh, shit, we're going to say something.
we'll test it out now. Hang on. That was beautiful.
Ambient.
You didn't give it long enough. I was going to give it like 2 seconds, and you gave it.
But you got a strong editing finger. You get in there and go, no, it's too long.
I panic in silence.
Dead air.
It's scary.
So what about then? How scary was it? So you did your first sort of more science based or story detail info comic, so to speak. If I can make up another new word.
Mm.
Was it scary as hell putting it out there for public consumption?
I've had a few scary moments, and that was where. Where I've made statements that I felt were a bit controversial or against the grain.
Yeah.
So scientifically, it's a little bit problematic, or is it politically problematic?
Well, probably more politically problematic. Yeah. I was known for doing comics on environmental issues and scientific issues, and then I decided to take a real left turn and get interested in drug policy and drug addiction.
Excellent.
And I sort of Yeah, I mean, I did ones where I was essentially saying that drug prohibition is causing more problems than it solves and we should legalize drugs. And then I accompanied that with an essay called Breaking the Silence on Responsible Drug Use, where I admitted my history of illicit drug taking and so forth.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was kind of waiting for the white vans to be parked outside my house.
And did the white vans come?
Well, they didn't. And then I did another one about peak oil and kind of saying, look, yeah. You know, we're building this.
You admitted your addiction to peak oil
as
well?
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Well, we've all got that really,
yeah.
Don't we?
Had a few weird experiences with peak oil, yeah.
So did your mum read it?
Yeah, they
she was okay with it?
They're okay with it.
Well, look, as long as you're doing something out of your drug use, as long as it's productive, I think
most parents say, I'm an artist, of course I take drugs.
I think no parent wants to hear, yep, you're sitting around on the couch getting stoned and you're not even
you're not even drawing comics. Come on, you can't take ecstasy.
But I mean, the point of the essay, Breaking the Silence on Responsible Drug Use, was, I have taken illicit drugs in the past, but it wasn't a big deal. It was something that I did.
Oh, my God, it's almost like people do it.
I know. And
I never would, but I know a close friend of mine has.
Now's the time to admit things.
Todd Lambert.
That's it, Todd Lambert. Yeah. It's fair to say maybe a former high school of mine and I had a disagreement over such matters, in fact. And that used to be a thing to hide, and now I'm proud. I might write an essay on it too.
Yeah. You should write an essay.
I call it, I got fucking expelled.
And I became a lecturer. So. Yeah.
Then I became a human. Yeah, we're not going to do it. So what was I going to ask? Have you copped any serious shit for any of your comics? Like, have you been hate-mailed and all that sort of good stuff?
Well, unfortunately, no. And I do wonder why that is compared to all the stories that you hear out there.
Mm.
I suspect some of the reason is because I'm male, and a lot of the abuse that gets thrown around the internet is often targeted towards females, unfortunately, but that's seems
to be a surprise. You do climate stuff. I mean, every time singly or as a couple, so to speak, Will and I have written
Totally.
Piece, when we do couple pieces, you drop the C word.
Climate change.
Yep. Mm. And a bunch of people, the double C, a bunch of people are going to descend upon you like a pack of monsters and try and tear you a new one. And then they tear each other new ones and you sit back and watch.
Just if you want to get hate mail, one day do a piece on bike helmet legislation.
Oh,
I know you were thinking of doing that one day. That one brings the hate.
I know, because...
See, we've done pieces in the past.
That wasn't just even go a back, piece on it.
Like, we've done many pieces where we've had, you know, talking about climate change and stuff like that. We've got a lot of hate for that, but nothing brought the hate like a bike helmet legislation piece.
And even better, it was one example.
Oh, yeah, it was one
12
example.
Points. It was an example for one of the 12 points, and we got schooled by a bunch of statistics professors.
No, we didn't
very
actually get
angry.
Schooled.
No, as in they tried to tell us how
you're
to
saying,
think
oh,
about
but
things.
But there was a lot of froth at the mouth. So if you're ever thinking of somewhere where you
go
want to
bike helmets, man.
I have seen a lot of these pieces that you're talking about where people get very passionate about this issue.
Ooh.
Are you happy with that? I mean, do you want to go into these? You know, drug policy, energy policy, climate change. These are areas where clearly there is the potential for political fisticuffs.
Mm.
Do you want to get into that sort of, not to be a politician, but do you want to push people a bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess the reason for doing the comics is to change people's attitudes, change people's behaviours, and to get people thinking about the world differently. And I have had a number of people saying that reading a certain comic of mine has changed their mind, and now they're starting an environmental club at their high school. Or
good result.
They like, for example, I had a guy who, he had a mother who was really anti-drugs and really, in favour of locking up the people who sell drugs and throwing away the key. And he showed his mum this comic, and it got her to sort of think differently about things. And
then she bought him a bomb. Nice,
hey, that's awesome. That's awesome because so often, this is the thing about going into different mediums. That an essay, a dry wall of text, might convince some people. But, I think the great thing about a comic is that it opens up a whole new realm of people that you can convince with that. And that's awesome as well that they've given you those stories back. Because as much as, we were talking before about, you get street cred or do you get paid or something like that. But
both.
Having the stories of actual people have changed the way they think about the world, and that's really awesome.
And I guess the good thing about the thing I'm proud of as well about my science comics, like Rat Park and Deviants in the Dark are the two ones that are the best examples of this, is I do step people through the actual research that the scientists did, because there are many people who tried to tell the Rat Park story and people who've come since and tried to tell the Rat Park story into drug addiction, and they just basically tell the answer to to readers. And
so they don't tell the story, they just give a result or the final point.
Whereas I'm saying, okay, the scientists were in this room and they on day one they introduced the rats into the enclosure, day two they did this, day three they did that. And I've had high school teachers show this comic to their students purely to demonstrate scientific design and the reason,
not even about the particular study. About the drugs, but
yeah, just like, okay, you've got a control group over here, you've got an experimental group over here, and just talking about the logic behind scientific experiments.
That's awesome.
Well, you're dangerously close to the realm of public intellectualism, which is very close to my heart. I know some people who are public intellectuals.
You can do public intellectualism, maybe in a different way.
Intellectualism,
from, you know, I just got to say, listener, please, go out and check now. Stuart, we want to check. They're going to be the newest one, energyslaves.com.
Energyslaves.com.
Awesome.
That'll take you to that page on my website. And while you're on the website, you can click on the topics section. You can see all the various topics I've written about, energy, science, drugs, so forth.
Awesome. And while you're there, listener, when you've looked at Energy Slaves, I want you to go and also Google image search the Dymaxion, which is the car that Buckminster Fuller invented. And did he ever drive it?
Yeah. Oh, yes, he did. Yeah, for demonstration purposes. That's
I'll look that up now. I can't talk anymore.
It is the most wild-looking mobile I have ever seen. Oh, that's been awesome. I'm gonna go and read some more comics now. Maybe even I might write one. Oh.
Go on. That's what he needs, competition.
Thanks so much. We've been having a chat with Stuart McMillan. We've got a couple of people to thank. Obviously, Stuart, very much.
Thanks,
but also,
guys.
The Wigan Pen here in Canberra, home of?
The best beer in the known southern hemisphere of the universe.
There
it's a beer emporium and also other thing.
Also, the Australian National Centre for the Public Awareness of Science.
Oh, for all your science communication needs, from undergrad to PhD and a little beyond with some consulting.
Thank you very much to our communications manager, Ella Barnett.
Yes, newly promoted and worth every penny.
We'll see you next week, listener.
Oh, yeah, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
Oh, yeah, and Twitter and Facebook.
They're all really good.